Drones.
Hello, that's a lot of zest.
West.
You've been saving that.
I'll do West.
West. Aaron West.
Eowyn. Eowyn West, like the priest in Princess Bride. Marriage.
Oh, I was thinking hunting wabbits.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing.
That makes that makes more sense. That's more filmic. So, thank you for pinch hitting. I wasn't gonna do a show this weekend, but we have this little holiday, Thanksgiving, coming up, and I actually am just returning from being out of town and about to go back out of town to do that whole thing. So anyway, thank you for doing this little one-off just to kind of get caught up. And of course, and everybody, Matt Gasteyer. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
I think everybody knows you by now, but I enjoy hashing out Criterion stuff with you. So, so glad to have you.
Well, you're paying me too, right? I mean, so.
I am, yeah. Yes. Okay. I'm paying you in Criterion. So what's going on?
Not much. A lot in terms of podcast lifetime since I was last on the show, because I started my own podcast.
Have you not announced that?
I haven't, yeah, because I think I had maybe done one or two the last time we were on. I think I was last on for the music episode, but yeah. I hadn't really put it up online yet. So I'm doing a show. It's called The Complete. Each season will be one director going through their filmography in chronological order. So each episode will be one movie in their filmography. And I'm starting with Stanley Kubrick. Thought that was an appropriate first dive.
Who?
Yeah. You may have heard of him.
Yeah.
He made a obscure documentary about a fighter in the 50s. I think that's probably what he's best known for. I'm doing it with Travis Trudell, who's been on the show a couple times for this first season, and I'll have a different co-host each season, but I'm having a lot of fun with Travis right now, and we just recorded Lolita this weekend with Erica Long from the Magic Lantern podcast. It was a really great conversation, so
all right.
I'll have that up.
Love Erica.
Later this week. Yeah, it was a lot of, well, it wasn't entirely fun. It's a difficult movie to dissect and discuss, but it was a great conversation.
I got to say, the timing is wow.
Yes, I know. Yeah. It's,
so I don't know if he went there.
We touched on it. I mean, I think the movie, it sort of speaks for itself within the context of the time. It definitely crossed my mind while I was watching the movie and prepping for the episode many times.
Yeah, actually, hold that thought on both parts, because Kubrick will be coming, make an appearance, and also creepiness will come back.
Yeah.
Well, I can't remember what it was, but there was something I was watching that made me. Oh yeah, actually, I know. Anyway, hold that thought. But before we get into the Criterion stuff, of course, we have the big February 2018 announcements, and we have just the latest news and releases. But you have this little concept that I just stumbled onto today that I am in love with. So do you mind mentioning this concept of February?
February, yeah. Well, February. So I came up with the idea in like August, but I was like, I don't know, November is just, it doesn't work, you know? So basically, I mean, this summer I went region free. Blame Aaron, hashtag blame Aaron. I mean, I think there, you know, our groups kind of egged me on, and there were just a few things that I really, really wanted, that I couldn't get here. So I finally pulled the trigger, and I've just been buying, it's embarrassing how many Blu-rays I've been buying, and especially considering the fact that I think I've probably watched about 4 region free Blu-rays up to this point.
Well, you just started.
Yeah. Well, so, no, but I have.
You need
but
time.
The thing is, I have way, way more than that. So that's the thing. So my idea was basically to spend a month only watching the Blu-rays that I have that are unwatched. And most of my Blu-rays are, I don't do a ton of blind buying. I probably do about 10-15% of what I buy is blind. Mm-hmm. So it will include stuff that I've seen before, but I want to watch the discs that I have and do some catching up. And I think if I do that, you know, because part of it is just, you see all this stuff on streaming. There's such great stuff on Filmstruck, mm-hmm. great stuff on Amazon Prime right now is killing it. So you just kind of want to, you think like, oh, well, maybe this stuff will go away and I'll never have it. My Blu-rays I'm going to have forever. But then forever becomes 5 years later and you still haven't done anything other than, you know, peel off the plastic wrap and take a look at the packaging. So this is a chance to do that. And I hope other people join in and, share what they're watching and, you know, give recommendations and stuff and egg everybody else on and encourage them to keep watching the stuff that, that's just been sitting on the shelves.
So just so I'm clear, that means in February you're not going to go to the movie theater. You're not going to watch anything on streaming. Like if you decide to sit down and watch a movie, you're going to put a disc in.
Yes. The one exception is I do sometimes, like if I have mindless work at work, I do start watching a movie while I'm doing that. And I don't have a Blu-ray player in my office, unfortunately. I think
that's acceptable.
I got to do it though. I got to get the 55-inch TV with the Blu-ray with the 4K Blu-ray player in my office. So I may watch stuff during the day or something like that. And I'm not going to hold entirely to it. Like if my wife wants to watch something, or if I'm going to a movie with my kids or something, sure. I'll do that. But you know, each night I try to watch at least one movie after my kids go to bed. And that movie will be a Blu-ray that I have bought.
Nice. Of course, I haven't dedicated a time, but I have like a stack literally a stack of Region B, probably about 50 discs of stuff I want to watch. And so on, you know, say a Thursday, Friday night, I'll just grab one, just whatever's near the top. And the weird artsy ones, the ones that I really want to see, but I, you know, like the 8 hour movies, they tend to stay in the stack. I'll look forward. I am on board and I'll participate in the, are we going to do this in Criterion Considered, Criterion Now, or just everywhere?
Yeah. I mean, I may mention it in Considered. Hashtag February. Let's get it going.
February. It's tough to say.
Yeah. You got to get the hang of it.
Sounds fun. Yeah. Of course, if the wife asks to go to a movie, I'm not going to say, nope, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Matt said, nope.
I'm holding just you to Blu-rays. It, Aaron. That's it.
Yeah. And she's going to be like, all right, my lawyer says you're going to the damn movies. I'm kidding. All right. Well, so we had the February 2018 announcements, and pretty anticlimactic. It was, the announcements were great, but sometimes you're not sure if they're going to happen that day. You can hit refresh really until the evening, and lately, sometimes they won't even tell you that it'll just be the next day. This month was the opposite. I think they just showed up early afternoon. Was it maybe 2-3 Eastern?
Yeah, I don't even think Blakeslee was even considering leaving the office.
For that.
No, I think it was like 2 or 3. It was nice. Of course, I was on a conference call when they came in, but
I was in a meeting too. I think it's the ultimate troll. I think that they just know we're anticipating it, so they're just so next month we'll start refreshing at 2 or 3. A pretty exciting month. In fact, I'd say extremely exciting month. As Doug had said a couple episodes, he likes to see movies or buy movies that he hasn't seen before. And I know you said you don't blind buy a lot, but there are a few here that in fact the latter few that I'm really looking forward to because I haven't seen them. So, but let's get into them. We have. February 6th, Elevator to the Gallows, which is Louis Malle, his breakthrough, really his first major narrative film, which of course stars the iconic Jean Moreau, or Lift to the Gallows. I know there was a 4K restoration that just played, in fact it was playing when we were in New York, and Dave Eves went and saw it, but we did not. So this is an upgrade, but it looks like it's really just the 2K restoration is the only thing. And by the way, I should warn everybody, I prepare a little better, but coming in from out of town and going out of town, I might get a few things wrong. So feel free to keep me honest, Matt. Elevator to the Gallows, what are your thoughts?
It's a great movie. He made it when he was 3 years old, which is amazing. I didn't know somebody that young could... he was 24 when he shot this movie. It's pretty incredible. Yeah. And it's a great movie. Amazing Miles Davis soundtrack. He made a lot of great movies in his career. This might not be my favorite, but the fact that it holds up so well to even his best movies, I think, is very impressive, particularly because it's not in the genre that he continued to really work in for the rest of his career. So, I was, a little disappointed not to see anything new on the disc.
Same cover
Yeah,
too.
well, so yeah, and as soon as I saw the cover, I knew that there wasn't going to be anything new. That's kind of how you can tell that they didn't really change anything else. I like the cover fine though, so I'm not bummed about that. But yeah, it's similar to Le Samurai. It's a situation where it's like, I'm not going to complain. I'm glad this is on Blu-ray now, and this is one of the discs I'm definitely going to buy from this month.
Yeah, I have a few DVDs. By a few, a few hundred or a couple hundred at least, or maybe 100 to 200. I actually haven't counted, but this is one of those that I haven't bought because I figured if there's going to be a film that's upgraded, that you don't want to spend the money on the DVD. This is a pretty. I know you have your lists. I think this would be the unsafe
This was on the
list,
don't buy list, yes.
right?
I mean, because
And even
because this
before.
restoration had been around for has been around for a couple of years, actually.
And even before that, I think this is kind of an
Yeah.
important French. I mean, Louis Malle is not really thought of as being part of the French New Wave, but as you mentioned, he was 24 and got his break from Jacques Cousteau, and so he was part of that wave of young filmmakers. Even though I think his work, I think it's up there with Truffaut, Godard. Actually, I think it surpasses
Me
Godard
too.
and Truffaut, but because and also you mentioned this isn't like his latter work. He really couldn't be pigeonholed into a specific genre. I mean, made a few war films or resistance films, made some great documentaries. But yeah, not a lot of neo-noir movies like this. So I guess, would you say this falls into
Oh
that
yeah, it
category or?
definitely does. I mean, it's similar. I think similar to Rafifi, it's kind of like that. I mean, even though
Yeah.
Dassin obviously is not French, but it's a French movie, and I think it's similar to that with Melville as well. Yeah, I mean, I guess the closest he came to this again was Atlantic City, which is a very good
Oh
movie,
yeah.
but this is much better
Long
than
ways
that. And I
out.
mean, the picture is only half of this. I think people kind of underrate the fact that this is going to be an uncompressed soundtrack of a Miles Davis score that's incredible. So this is going to be fun to listen to just as much as look at.
Yeah, and I of course I'm talking to my music geek friend,
Yeah.
maybe the biggest music geek friend, the published author. But we've talked about Miles Davis before, and but not in the context of this film. However, I think the film was revolutionary as far as scoring music. In fact, I'm trying to think of other jazz scores that well blow out, blow up. I always do that. Isn't Blow Up kind of have the jazz score?
It's
There's a
like
lot
a
of them, but
good 60s go-go thing going on. But yeah, I mean, well, Anatomy of a Murder had a jazz score, and I mean, but that was after this. I mean, this is an unusual situation where he did this. So it's
Did Shadows have a jazz score?
that's a good question. I'm not sure who did this
I
score for that. Yeah, I mean, it's such a
don't
low budget film. I'm not sure if they were able to get this kind of a high profile thing going. I mean, once it kicked in, it really kicked in. I mean, the Eclipse series stuff is swimming with jazz scores, like the Kurihara set and the Basil Dearden set has Charlie Mingus playing bass, in the last movie on
Oh,
that set.
nice.
So,
Oh, haven't seen that one yet.
yeah.
So.
So it's around in Criterion, but it's hard to argue with Miles Davis. And this record is one of the few that really stands on its own. A lot of people who love Miles Davis have listened to this record hundreds of times or thousands of times and barely even are aware it's a movie. So.
Yeah, I wish there was an isolated score, but I guess you could just listen to is this out as an
Oh yeah.
album?
Yeah.
Okay, so you can listen to the album. So I see I haven't. But yeah, it's amazing. So I'm looking forward to this one, and then we have February 13th is a pretty big deal. So we have first, well, actually you might not agree, but Night of the Living Dead, George Romero. So I'm surprised it was so quick. I know it was a lot of people expected it, but I thought they might hold out for horror or for Halloween. But this is a pretty big deal as far as the disc goes, because this was in the public domain. There were, I think, literally like 200 versions of this out there. So of course our thought was, well, what are you going to bring to this Criterion? And I think that they brought a ton.
It's amazing.
To it. So first off, have you seen Night of the Living Dead, or has it been a while?
It's been a long time since I saw it. I definitely liked it when I saw it. But I think I thought of it more as kind of historically important than as something that I really got into as a horror movie. Mm-hmm. So I'll be interested to see how I feel about it now. This is the other movie that I'm going to buy right away, though, mainly because the extras are spectacular and look super interesting.
Yeah, I saw this as a horror. I didn't really think of this as an art horror. I think I didn't realize its importance until after it, you know, had set in, and I guess its cult status has been just growing in the last, maybe partly because of the public domain, but and also because of the legacy of all the other zombie movies. But yeah, the special. So there's Night of Anubis, and I'm going to put a little article in the show notes from Bloody Disgusting. It was Bloody Disgusting, yeah. Right? So they're doing some coverage about this, and there's going to be more. And so one of the features is a never before presented work print edit of the film. And so a lot of people thought that might mean that this work print would have a lot of missing footage, which actually it turns out is not the case. In fact, I'll link the article. You can read it, but it's not. Sounds like it's going to be maybe a couple new scenes and then, but 16 millimeter. So, but there's a lot of other stuff. There's, documentary, there's a new program featuring Darabont, Del Toro, Robert Rodriguez. There's, the dailies, there's audio commentaries probably from the other discs, other older interviews, and then stuff about the editing, the score, directing, ghouls, and then plenty more, and there's even more. So I just can imagine. I think February I'm going to be spending a lot of that with just this blue. Pretty impressive.
Great cover too.
Great cover. I saw a little hate about the cover. Maybe I think the comments I saw were that it was too busy.
The only problem is the C covering up the title. That's because it's a theatrical poster, so they didn't think about that. But I mean, you know, it's not the end of the world that there's a C.
It'd be cool if they had the C by the hand, so it's like about to.
Yeah, right.
The zombies about to touch
or
the hand
zombies. And the zombie hand kind of looks like the C on the other side.
Oh yeah, there it does. It's like an inverse C. So all right, missed opportunity Criterion. But no, and we talked about the poster when it came out a few months ago, but I do think it's a good cover. In fact, I'd say this month, I think the covers are worth talking about, which last couple, they haven't been haven't had as much gravitas. So then we have the movie Silence of the Lambs. So this is a Laserdisc upgrade. Again, a big deal. 1991 Oscar winner. Surprisingly, really the breakthrough for... what's his name? The guy,
Jonathan Demme. Anthony Hopkins.
Hopkins. I mean, he'd been around, but I think in the popular consciousness.
Yeah, and he won an Oscar for like 8 minutes of performance.
I know, and also Jodie Foster too, and I think she deserved her Oscar a little more.
Yeah.
So this also is a big disc. There's a lot of features. Of course, we always say with a film that's come out. A lot. This one's not public domain, but it just has had a number of editions, releases throughout the years. I was a little disappointed. I don't know if you're with me. No, there's a lot here, and I don't own the old Blu-rays, so I it's all new to me. But it kind of seems like, all right, well, you didn't really do much new. Maybe it's because I'm comparing it to Night of the Living Dead. But are you with me on that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think they really feel like the 4K. Is the selling point here, because it's obviously it's not a 4K presentation, but it's a new restoration. And I think I've heard pretty mixed things about the Blu-ray that I think this is an MGM movie that they put out. So I think from their perspective, that's really what they're selling it on. I mean, they did pull in a ton. There's a ton of extras here. It's just that they are all stuff that was made previously. So,
except for there's one new interview with critic Maitland McDonough. So that might be the visual essay. And who knows, it might be like a 45-minute comprehensive essay, which I think would be very cool. And the other stuff, I love the Criterion supplements, especially their originals. And the studio supplements, like deleted scenes, you know, I guess that's fun. You know, like Twin Peaks, it's fun. If it's like just regular movie and they cut a scene for a good reason, sometimes it's okay, but to not see that. And then it looks like they have like the standard featurette documentary, so I don't know if those are any good or not, but probably not as good as like one crafted for the disc or like an actual documentary. Do you like the film?
I do.
you hesitate.
Well, I like it. I don't really understand the kind of cult following that it has. It's just kind of like a very good thriller. You know, so I don't dislike it, but I don't really need to ever see it again necessarily. I do also kind of have problems with the whole trans thing. Like it's a little,
that'll be
it's,
tough.
It's
yeah.
just, it's dated. I mean, and that part of it kind of, you know, I don't know. It doesn't help that I don't love the, you know, that I don't love the movie. And then there's that. So
you're not buying this one.
No, right? This won't be a movie that I buy. I mean, you know, some of this stuff seems kind of interesting to me. I do like Jonathan Demme, but I mean, I don't need to
stop really making sense.
Yeah. that would have been something. We'll see.
That would be cool. But
if this comes back, I mean, who knows, you know, who knows?
Sure. Yeah. No, I think I've thought for a while that that is possible. So the reaction for this has been a little mixed. I think there was a lot of hype. And I think the backlash had to wait a while, but yeah, some people actually think that it's a little bit of a sellout for which I don't buy. I mean,
no, they would love to have every single
Breakfast Club.
And this is coming back. They already released
Laserdisc.
This. They would no. This was a DVD. This is the this is something where they 100%. There's nothing on. I can't think of a single thing. Maybe some listeners can challenge me on this, but I can't think of a single thing on DVD that's out of print now that they would refuse to put out if they had, you know, the opportunity, if they had something new like this 4K digital restoration. You know, I mean, I think that to me, there's no way they weren't going to put this out. And yeah, I mean, the selling out thing, I don't even have time for that conversation. It's just a total waste of time. They're a company and they, I mean, this is a major movie. It swept the Oscars. So
it did.
You know.
Yeah. No. And I think part of that is my memory of Doug and his 20 times comment that it was on. I was actually just checking out. So there's one film that's out of print they might not be clamoring for, and that's Chasing Amy.
Yes, that's true. That's a good one.
That might be the one. But, you know, I think that if the Michael Bay movies, I think they would do those again. I know that it's always the punchline. Okay, you have Bergman, but you have Michael Bay. But I still think they would.
Why
bring
not
it back.
Launch 4K with The Rock? That would be amazing. I would buy that.
Why not? I would buy that too. And I haven't bought those, but I've heard great things. Even though they're not great movies, but I've heard that they're great insights into studio.
Oh God, so, the Armageddon commentary is amazing.
That's what I hear. So yeah, good. One day. So anyway, the latter half of the month are all new to me. So we have on February 20th, we have Satyajit Ray. I always struggle with him, with his name. So this is The Hero. So this is not the one that we expect. Well, we've expected a lot of his films to come out. I thought maybe The Chess Players. I think Devi or Devi, however you say it. This one I wasn't as familiar with. But it's The Hero, and it's 1966, so this might be the latest Blu-ray version of a Ray film.
Yeah, I think you're right, because I think Big City is like 61 or something.
Yeah, and of course the Eclipse is a lot later, which is we've talked about before, a terrific set. So this is, but I expect, in fact, I think he was pretty consistently amazing as a director. Not a lot of supplements on this. We have a 2008 interview, a couple new, one new critical essay, or it says program featuring film scholar Maheli Sen. So I guess that's a critical essay. We forgot to mention the Silence of the Lambs cover, so we'll get to that in a second. But what do you think of The Hero? Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. I don't think I've seen any Ray that is not on disc yet. But I've seen everything that is, including the Eclipse set, which is great. I kind of love it all. So I have sort of been waiting. I considered getting that I think it's Artificial Eye. Box.
It is. I was going to bring that
yeah,
up.
Yeah, so I've considered... This is not on that, though, right? I think...
It is,
oh,
actually.
It is on it? Okay. Yeah, I considered getting that, and I just have never pulled the trigger, kind of assuming that Criterion would eventually put all of these things out. This looks interesting, and I can't wait to see it. I love the cover. It's super awesome.
I do. The cover's fun, and I think there's something in the movie. Of course, I haven't seen the movie, so I can't speak to that, but I think it relates to the movie. And yeah, that Artificial Eye Region B box, it's a five-disc box, and it had The Big City, and then Charlotta, and then The Coward, The Holy Man, and The Hero. So those, the Coward and The Holy Man have not come out on Criterion,
yeah.
But I'd say good chance. Well, of course, we know that pretty much everything of his in his library is under license.
So yeah, and all those, all that box is on Filmstruck, too. So you can watch all of those movies, just not in HD.
I think, of course, depending on the masters, if they're on this box, then hopefully there's a good restoration out there. But I think eventually, it might be a while, but we'll have pretty much the entire library of Ray. I would actually like another box set.
Yeah, that'd
just
be great.
Just put out three movies. And then we have, on the same day, we have An Actor's Revenge, which is Konnichikawa. And this is a film that I've wanted to see for years, decades, but or decade one or two, really. But I've been waiting for a moment like this for a Blu-ray. And I love Ichikawa's work, what I've seen. I haven't seen this one, but... and this is a 4K restoration. I think it... Didn't it play one of the festivals? I forget. Interesting cover. I think this one isn't as beloved. The font is getting some interest. The font's a little loud. Have you seen this film?
I haven't seen it. I really like all of his Criterion movies. His sort of twofer that are DVD only at this point, Burmese Harp and Fires on the Plain, are pretty intense movies. Fires on the Plain is certainly one of the darkest films in the collection. And he's having a similar moment. This is actually the second film of his in recent time that they'll be releasing, because they're putting Tokyo Olympiad back into print next month.
That's right.
So.
He's been a staple on Hulu and now Filmstruck. And, of course, also the Makioka Sisters, which is one I haven't watched yet. And actually, I think that's a Kabuki film, so this might pair better with that.
It's kind of Ozu-ish. It's like about sisters getting married. But it's weird because it was made in the 80s and it's super 80s, even though it's like not set in the 80s. So it's kind of like, this funny, it's got like a synth score. It's a bare bones Blu-ray, but
are we still talking about An Actor's Revenge?
Oh, I thought you were talking about, Makioka Sisters.
I thought you meant
Makioka Sisters was Kabuki and paired with Actor's Revenge.
Yeah, see, I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
so
no, Actor's Revenge
so,
is another movie that like has been on Filmstruck forever and Hulu forever, and has been on my queue, and I just never got around to it.
Yeah, I think it's still on my queue. In fact, if I renewed Hulu, it would probably be at the top of that queue, too. It's one of those that you just look for an excuse for, and this is a good excuse. So will you buy this one?
I probably will watch this first before considering buying it. But I will try to probably get the Blu-ray from my library rather than watch it on Filmstruck, because I'm sure it's going to look real pretty. And I'd love to see the Tony Raines interview, too, so...
Yeah, so good point. There's a new interview with Tony Raines, who is always amazing, and yeah, there's a 1999 interview with Ichikawa, so that should be good, and that's really about it. There's new English subtitle translation, so I don't know how the old one was, but hopefully the subtitles are awesome. But yeah, so that's 4 out of 5, and that brings us to the end of the month, Tom Jones. So, hey, yeah, this is on February 27th. It's a short month, and so this one, I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay.
I do like. So I can't really speak to it. I'm really just based on reputation. Pretty much everybody I know that has seen it, that I respect, and that includes my wife, has hated it and has said it's terrible. So I of course I'm going to give it a shot. I think I'm really looking forward to the transfer of 4K, and it's from what I understand, it's a very you know, good color film. So have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it.
So is that my premonition off base?
So yeah, Tom Jones was one of the, you know, when you I think I first tried to watch it when I was a teenager, and you know, was trying to watch the Best Picture winners, because this did win Best Picture, which is crazy.
Oh, we have two of those this
yeah
month. Wow.
That's true. So I got maybe 15 minutes into it, and I was just like, what am I doing? And then I went back and tried to watch it again 5 or 10 years later, and watched the whole thing, and just do not find this movie funny at all, and just strongly dislike it in every way.
So that's pretty much the consensus I've heard. Maybe I'll be surprised. Dare I ask, are you going to buy this one? Are you going to watch?
I think the question is whether I'm going to watch it or not. Yeah, I mean, it's been so long since I've seen it, and I think there are two versions, right? So I'm not sure which one I saw. I guess I probably saw the director's cut, but I'm not sure which one.
Well, I will buy it. And there are some interesting features. There's Peter Cowie has a conversation between him and Lassily. I don't know who Lassily is. Lassily.
Oh, he's the director of photography.
And it's about cinematography, so that makes sense. And that's probably, if there's an interesting aspect of this film, from what I understand, I think the DP, the photography would be the top of that list. Dick Cavett, I do enjoy those sometimes, but it seems like when they don't have an extra, right, let's throw a Dick Cavett in there. And that one's with Albert Finney. And then there's a new interview with Vanessa Redgrave, and she was married to Tony Richardson, so that could be interesting. I don't think she's going to dish a lot of gossip, but she was around during the filming. And then there's a new essay with a scholar. There's an audio interview, which I won't listen to, about the compositions. And yeah, actually, there's an interview with the editor of the director's cut. That's weird that there's an editor of the director's cut. But but I guess he probably worked with Richardson pretty closely. But Robert Lampert, excuse me. So yeah, as far as features go, it's pretty good. I don't know how much this will sell or if this has a lot of demand out there. Maybe this is, there's more popular interest in this. I don't know. People don't like the cover of this one. Have you picked up on that?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's fine. I mean, it's very stylized, and so I can see how some people just simply wouldn't like that style. But I think for that style, it's done nicely and kind of makes sense for the movie. So I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I'm not an art critic, but it looks like line art with some, you know, some colors.
Yeah.
See, that's my
I mean, I think
art.
You
line
look
art,
at the you
colors.
Look at the cover and you get basically what the movie is. You know, it's okay. You know, it's from that time period. It's a comedy. I think it looks light and yeah, like you said, line arty. You know, so I don't know. It's just not that good of a movie, unfortunately. You know, I really enjoyed A Taste of Honey. You know, I mean, I guess he's kind of mixed for me. The Entertainer was a Laserdisc release, and that did absolutely nothing for me. So,
have you seen The Loneliness of the Longest?
That I haven't seen. So I know that's
yeah,
really
that,
great.
That could
yeah.
be. that could be your a good
man. Yeah, and I've seen a few of his later things, Ned Kelly, I saw, and Blue Sky, which is good, yeah. But really, it's okay. Kind of Jessica Lange's performance is kind of all that's going on there.
It's pretty much an Oscar performance movie.
Yeah.
Or nominated well, performance movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they have rights to everything, so there might be more Richardson. I think Loneliness is probably the most likely coming up. Maybe the Hotel New Hampshire? I don't know. Probably not. Yeah, but kind of like Mal, but not in terms of quality, but I think his in terms of his tone, his work has been kind of all over the place. So that's our February lineup. So what do you think?
It's a great lineup. I mean, even, you know, I personally don't like Tom Jones, but it won Best Picture, so somebody likes it. And I mean, in general, this is a extremely varied month with major directors behind every one of these movies, right? I mean, it's much a nonstop all-star list. So I was very impressed. And I thought it was also interesting that the only movie that is relatively modern here is Silence of the Lambs, which is already in the collection. Mm-hmm. Everything else is from the 60s, basically. So, it's kind of an interesting set, especially relative to kind of previous recent months that have been a lot of kind of blockbuster mainstream releases. There's some interesting stuff here. So I was very pleased.
Yeah, no Breakfast Clubs. Well, so we had an interesting poll this month with predictions. Last month, I think basically was everybody was stumped. I don't think anybody got anything, and I know the predictions are kind of silly, but they are fun in a way too. But this month, people did pretty well. In fact, I'm just looking at the poll now. The top one was Silence of the Lambs, so that was a no brainer. Grand Budapest Hotel, I think we've talked about. I think that could be later this year, but I don't think that's going to be anytime soon. Night of the Living Dead was third. Elevator to the Gallows was fourth. And honestly, I don't know where that came from. If somebody just ran, maybe because of they toured the print. And then Tree of Life, Passion of Joan of Arc, Dead Man. Tom Jones was on there a few down on the list. And I think that's it. So yeah, of course, The Hero and what else? Oh, Actor's Revenge. I don't think anybody would ever guess those. But relatively predictable month. So good job, group.
Hooray. I put Tree of Life, so I don't know anything.
you don't know anything. Well, I think that made sense. Would make sense for a Flash
Tale. Yeah, though, I thought it was either going to be that or Lambs. So.
Yeah, and I think we pretty much all agree that probably Lambs and... Lambs and Night of the Living Dead are probably the flash sale titles.
Yeah.
So that probably it'd be like in the second week of February. So let's get to some new stuff if you're ready.
Let's do it.
We have we just released was Le Samurai and Desert Hearts. In fact, I just bought them yesterday at a Barnes & Noble because I was in Atlanta. And then coming soon, the next release. Oh, I'm sorry, Jabberwocky is coming soon. That's this week, right?
Yep.
And then after that is the Big Olympic set. I would ask if you're going to buy that one. Going to buy that one?
I asked for it for Christmas.
Okay. All right. Well, I hope you've been nice.
It was the trailer and the fact that they're extending the Barnes & Noble sale. And, you know, I'm deep into this thing. I've watched 900 of these. I can pony up some cash, or at least my wife can, so that I can and she'll watch them with me too. So I think it's worth it to see what they put together for the set.
Yeah, we pre-ordered, and I think we're gonna just start right in December. Going to start our Olympic month. That might be a big part of February for these Olympic films. It might be for you too. So a pretty good release late this November for the holidays. And then we had a closet video, and actually the timing. Well, I was about to say the timing was uncanny because we just talked about Piano Teacher, but Piano Teacher really just came out, so it kind of makes sense. But Isabelle Huppert was in the closet, and I just watched her again. And that quote, great movie again about a week ago. I do love that movie, however difficult. But I do adore Hooper, and I thought she made a pretty killer closet video. So what'd you think?
I thought it was awesome. I mean, she, you know, the first few minutes, I think she did not get what the closet video was because she was just grabbing stuff and saying that she liked it. But even that was great because the things that she was picking were super interesting and not necessarily what you would expect. And then she started to open up and really talk about the things that she was picking. And she's also Isabelle Huppert, so whatever she does, I'm going to love. So it was great.
Exactly.
It was perfect. I'm totally on board with every, you know, she can do no wrong. The, you know, everybody is right about that. She's amazing.
Although she didn't choose Tampopo, that was recommended, and so she took it. So I'm sure she liked it, but I don't know if it stands up against some of the other. But yeah, there are a lot of more obscure movies and some DVDs, like A Bad Timing was one. Nicholas Rogue. That's one I haven't watched yet, but
that's my favorite Rogue film, actually. Really? Yeah, and when she picked that up, I was like, of course you picked this up. Oh my god. Like, she should have been in that movie. It's exactly...
Really?
Yeah, it's, like, made for her. So, I mean...
She didn't pick Heaven's Gate.
Yeah.
I don't think she wants to revisit that monstrosity. But she... yeah, she did pick a lot of DVDs, too, I noticed, which I thought was pretty cool. Usually those get glossed over. But, yeah, Isabelle Huppert. So go watch it if you haven't already. And it's 3 minutes of fun in the closet. So that sounds good.
But, 3 minutes in heaven, yeah.
Yeah, and of course she's still doing it with Elle, which I thought was pretty great. Actually, that pairs well with Piano Teacher. Tough, flawed characters. So anyway, and then we had some more Godzilla news. So we talked about that with Keith. What was that, a week or two ago when it was first? Actually, Keith scooped it when he saw the release on Stars. And then the Godzilla movies website, which I didn't know was a thing, but now I do. But sure, there's a thing for everything. So they have been they've had the scoop on a lot of these releases, and so they say that the Criterion releases on disc are confirmed. So I don't know who they're talking to, but what do you think? Do you think that these Godzilla films are coming out on in a Criterion box sometime this year?
No. So the quote that I saw, I think it was maybe it was a follow up on Godzilla movies, which, by the way, when I saw the link, I was like, please let this be Godzilla reviewing movies, but it's not.
Film critic, yeah. Godzilla.
Yeah, exactly. the second thing I think was from Mulvaney, and it said that the films are going to be on Filmstruck in December at some point. And they will eventually release them on DVD Blu-ray, but that they're not currently on the slate. So they're coming at some point, but not imminent. And in the meantime, we can all enjoy them on Filmstruck, which I will definitely be doing.
I see. Okay. So it could be a Bulldog Drummond situation where we could release these. It depends on money and
But I feel like Godzilla, they're going to put these out. It's just a question of when.
So?
Yeah, I mean, I think they just got the rights, probably. You know, so they just their slate is packed. So
okay, so but we're probably talking distant future.
Yeah,
maybe like earliest end of the year, like kind of like Zatoichi.
Yeah, I would say so.
Alexa's talking to me again. Damn you, Alexa! I'm doing a podcast. Godzilla, do you like these films or have you seen them? Or
I've seen a couple.
Binge them?
I mean, they're not, some of them are actually kind of good, I think, but for the most part, they're just fun to watch, you know, and they know what they are and they just do their thing. And, you know, there's a time and a place for those movies.
Yeah, I think they're probably good binge watch material. Kind of like Zatoichi. You could probably watch them over a span of like 3 weeks to a month. And, and they're probably just good light entertainment. Actually, probably a lot like Zatoichi, just not like Zatoichi.
Yeah, I think Zatoichi is a bit higher quality, I would say, than these movies. But at the same time, maybe even more entertaining in some respects.
Really?
So.
Okay. Yeah, these are, except for the original, they're all blind spots for me. So I guess I'll watch them, although you're not setting the bar too high.
I mean, if you like a bunch of guys in rubber suits doing wrestling, then you're going to like these movies.
Who doesn't like that? So this is where a Criterion does cross into MST3K territory, yeah. Which actually they Night of the Living Dead, they've done that as well. So, or maybe it's Rift Tracks. I can't keep track. So anyway, Godzilla. So I guess in December, Filmstruck. And actually, I learned about another Filmstruck series coming up, so I'll get to that in a second. But I saw something on Criterion Forum, and I wasn't sure about the sourcing about this, but they said that that WB, Clockwork Orange, and Papillon were out of print. I'm not sure where you can learn this information, if it's on some website somewhere, or if this person had an in. Do you know about this kind of thing?
My assumption, if they're not just making it up, is that they work for either a distribution company or a store, and so they get catalogs or something like that, and so they know that these are being discontinued.
Okay, so could be made up. So preface everything with that. Probably about a year ago, if you had said A Clockwork Orange, I might have said, nah. But really, since Strangelove and now Barry Lyndon, I could kind of see it. And since you're doing this Kubrick cast, I don't know. What do you think?
I think it would be insane. I mean, I just can't even... Is this like the worst sign for home entertainment ever? they would give up Clockwork Orange? I mean,
well, Strangelove is. It's not in the same.
It's not. No, it's not. I mean, Strangelove is major. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's just to me, Barry Lyndon makes so much sense because it's underappreciated. Right. It's a 3-hour costume drama. It's not the kind of movie that people are going to necessarily watch when they're 17 and just getting into Kubrick. Clockwork Orange to me is like a perennial title. And just, my assumption is just that they feel like sales have slowed down to the point where the fact that Criterion has shown with their WB titles that they will put them out in amazing editions and that they will actually sell and make money for WB. I mean, who knows what this means? If they can get Clockwork Orange, what can they get from WB? I mean, maybe they can get some major, even bigger titles. I mean, I don't think they're going to give up Casablanca or Unforgiven or something. I mean, Unforgiven's just coming out on 4K. So, I mean, but Casablanca, I mean, all of the other Bogart titles, Treasure of Sierra Madre, I mean, I'm hoping Bringing Up Baby's coming soon. So, I mean,
I think that's
I definitely think that's a strong possibility at this point. But like these, I mean, Clockwork Orange is just a major movie. Papillon, on the other hand, is 87 hours and boring as hell. I'm sorry, I hate that movie.
I did see it a long time ago. I think that's one of those I've seen that I haven't put a rating on Letterboxd just because I have no credibility. I can't remember, and maybe that's
why. You probably fell asleep 3 hours in, and so you don't remember four-fifths of the movie.
The movie played in my presence one time in my life, but that doesn't count to click that box. So just with Kubrick, though, so suppose that this is correct, that Clockwork Orange, and I can see it because there's how many Kubrick sets have there been? How many releases? There are overseas Region B releases. They're discounted pretty heavily. I think you can get like a Kubrick set for like £15 overseas. So, it makes sense. But I think then where does this line get drawn? So could there be 2001? Could there be 2001 would be the
that
big
seems
one.
Like the one
the,
yeah
the Shining
yeah. I mean 2001 seems like the one that would be least likely. I guess the Shining, because it has that horror appeal, would be tough for them to grab too. I mean, my assumption was that the next one that WB would give them was Eyes Wide Shut, just because
that
it's
makes
not
sense.
As popular
or Lolita,
yeah I mean although Lolita is not WB,
is that WB?
I don't think. Okay. Yeah, well, it definitely wasn't initially WB. I don't know if they have the rights now because it's included in all those sets. But I don't know. Maybe all of these. I mean, 2001 was a Laserdisc, so you never know.
It was, and 2001 is a big deal. Yeah, maybe some anniversary they'll come out. I can't think of. So that was 1969. So maybe
68,
right? Oh, 60. Ooh, ooh. Okay, we just started a rumor in our little Criterion echo chamber. There could be an anniversary edition of 2001 coming out next year. You heard it here first.
I think it's going to be packaged with the Bergman films.
Yeah. Hey, I think that's happening.
No, I definitely do. I'm just saying. It'll be like one big anniversary box set of all the movies that are celebrating anniversaries in 2018.
Just 1 month, those two movies, or those two releases. All right. So then there, speaking of Criterion Forum, there was another comment on the Criterion Forum about Bordwell, David Bordwell, who, of course, we've talked about with University of Wisconsin-Madison Film Studies, and we've talked to his coworker, Jeff Smith. And so he was on the Film Comment podcast talking about his new book, and I don't have it in front of me, but it's a really good book. In fact, I'd started reading it. It's about 1940s Hollywood and really about just the, I think the way he puts it is creative communication or collaboration among different filmmakers and just how immersed they were in cinema and how they all, so you see a lot of the same types of elements like flashbacks in noir as you see in thrillers and so forth. So they were kind of all borrowing from each other. And he's, of course, it's very academic and he goes, so I'm enjoying reading it, but the thing is he talks about so many great films from the 40s that I haven't seen that I really want to read it and watch movies as I do. But if I do that, I'll have to go seek these out and it'll probably take me like 5 years to read the book. Anyway, I digress. He was on a podcast, on Film Comment podcast, along with Imogen Sarah Smith, who's a big noir aficionado, and she's been on some Criterion discs.
Yeah, she has a column as well on Criterion. It's like a noir column on the website. Yeah. She's awesome. Her essays are incredible.
She's great. You mean on Film Comment? Yeah. She is great, and she's very articulate, and I love hearing her talk. And every time she's on a disc, I really enjoy what she brings. So, yeah, it's a really good discussion. They get into the weeds. I wouldn't go so far as to call it academic. I'd say they probably hit more of the noir. The subject is not noir, but just because they're both into noir, they talk about that a lot. But anyway, at the Criterion Forum, they kind of speculated, or they said, oh, he said he's working on a Harold Lloyd set. So that my ears perked up. Did you listen to this podcast?
No, I downloaded it, but I haven't. After you had mentioned it, I think on a chat. I haven't listened to it yet. Is that the talkies box, you think?
Anyway, the episode is good. I would recommend it. But no, it's a nothing burger.
Oh.
he does the observations on film art.
Oh, okay.
So it was at the very end. It's kind of like their version of Piece of Flair. They have a thing. What have you watched recently that's good? And so he mentions he's been watching some Lloyd, and he said he's doing it for part of his ongoing series. And there's earlier in the cast, he referenced the ongoing series when he talked about Brute Force and Burt Lancaster.
Right.
So yeah, there might be a Harold Lloyd box coming out, but I think there will be a Harold Lloyd, study from Bordwell coming on Filmstruck, which I will enjoy very much. But anyway, don't get your hopes up by that.
Oh, well.
We won't spread that one. Yeah.
Well, I did show my kids Safety Last a couple weeks ago, and they loved it, which was great. So I can keep them.
It's amazing how that stuff plays. That and Chaplin and even Keaton can play to kids. It's timeless. So anyway, I just wanted to shatter that rumor before anybody thinks it's coming. But I think we're due for a Lloyd. What was the I can't remember.
There was one
that was rumored.
Well, Speedy was the last, but yeah, there was a rumor of a talkies box. I think is it his granddaughter who kind of runs his whatever it's called, the trust or legacy foundation,
estate.
I think she mentioned that they were doing a talkies box, and then there was another feature that I think they're prepping.
Okay, well. Eventually, I think Harold Lloyd's a mainstay, but there was a rumor of also a collection of shorts on Filmstruck. So That would be unprecedented, I think, as far as silent filmmakers. But
well, yeah, silent, but W.C. Fields.
I guess W.C. Fields, yeah. But that's been a while. So anyway, Harold Lloyd, more coming to Filmstruck. So, all right, you want to talk about some food stuff?
Yum.
So it's Thanksgiving. And actually, you pitched this just to have something to talk about. We thought we might do short takes that are food-related and then talk a little bit about foodie movies, I guess somewhat briefly. But okay, I guess really for us, it has to be art foodie movies, which there's probably about like 30. Unless you're going to make some really big leaps. You know, the fact that people eat food in a restaurant in this movie. So anyway, do you have any favorite foodie movies that, we'll start with non-Criterion. Any of that?
Well, one of my favorite movies ever and, probably my favorite animated movie is Ratatouille.
really?
It is. Okay. Yeah. I think it's a spectacular movie about food and the emotion that is generated from eating food. And I also think it's a great movie about the drive to be an artist in general. I mean, I love that movie. I love, you know, and then there's the big ones like Big Night and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Sure.
Like Water for Chocolate is pretty good. and then Eat, Drink, Man, Woman is a really great food movie.
Yep, this is the list.
I mean, these are the big ones. I mean, you know, and then it gets...
The cook, the thief, the wife and her lover. Was that on yours?
Then it gets... That's a good example of a movie that's like, it's not really about food, but there's food, you know, involved in it.
I think it's it's about indulgence.
It's like Fried Green Tomatoes as well. Like it's like you know it's kind of about food, but not or Mystic Pizza.
But they have sex on food. I guess.
Well, then in the realm of the senses,
I know it, and actually sallow.
Yeah, right.
So okay, well, there you go. You can learn how to cook an egg. So those are good movies. Of course, I think you mentioned a lot of the ones that I thought of. I didn't really prep, but I think Chef actually is a good recent addition. I wouldn't say it's the biggest art film, but I took a liking to it, and I like Cuban food. So what else is there? There's I didn't prep for this as much as you.
I have one that I think a lot of people either haven't seen or have kind of dismissed because it was remade into a pretty bad Catherine Zeta-Jones movie, which is Mostly Martha, which is a film.
I haven't seen it.
It was made into No Reservations with Catherine Zeta-Jones and Aaron Eckhart.
Oh, right.
This was a really good film. It's kind of, I think it's German or Austrian, but it's, it's about this kind of single chef who, gets, it's like a very cheesy kind of like Miramax-y plot. It's like, you know, she gets a young kid that she has to take care of. But it's just done really well. And it's kind of like one of those crowd pleasing movies, which I think is a lot of these food films fall into that crowd pleasing category. You know, even the documentaries, like Jiro Dreams of Sushi or Super
I was going to mention
Me
that, that kind of you're still in all of mine, but they're so common though.
Yeah.
But Jiro Dreams of Sushi is a great example. That's like food porn in documentary.
Oh yeah.
Form. It's great. One I thought of that you might not have thought of is Sideways.
Oh yeah.
Even though it's not strictly food, but it's wine. And I think it kind of occupies that same circle.
One of the main restaurants that they eat at in that movie is called the Hitching Post, and it's actually a restaurant that I've been to a number of times. It's in California,
really?
A couple hours north of Los Angeles. So,
okay, well, I'll have to
check
it out.
Yeah, it was weird because I saw that movie in theaters, and they were sitting in the the restaurant.
And you'd already eaten there
a
before,
couple
right?
of times. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That doesn't happen every day. Soylent Green was on a list, and I guess I'm not going to spoil it. I think everybody knows the secret, but But yeah, I guess that's kind of a, it's about food, it's about nourishment, and it's a dystopian nourishment film. Do you have any others?
Those were the big ones that were, that are non-Criterion, I think. I mean, the one interesting thing when I was looking over these, and the short take that I have, which is Criterion, is about French cuisine, but it's not a French movie, is I was surprised at how few French movies I could think of that were about food, mm-hmm. considering that, you know, they sort of are viewed, but more importantly, view themselves as the center of cuisine in the world. And the fact that they don't really necessarily make a lot of, or at least any high profile international movies. It was hard for me to even think of one, even on Criterion, that that was really about food. And there's a few movies like The Two of Us has some food in it and food preparation. There's a few movies that have some of it, but it's certainly not what the film revolves around.
Well, there's this list that somebody put together, and this helped me because I didn't do any prep. But it has Gene Dielman, which isn't really about food. That it just has food preparation. It has The Secret of the Grain, so that is French, and I'd say that one is a food.
Yeah, although
movie.
It's interesting, both Gene Dielman is Belgian, and then Belgian, and Secret of the Grain is about immigrants. It's not about French
it
food.
It is, yeah. You're right. It's not about French food. And then the only other French one was The Bakery Girl of Monceau, although that she just happens to work in a bakery. I don't think there's really too much about
it. He eats a lot of pastries. It's like ghost story level pastries.
It's what you do in France. So I don't spoil it. Is your short take going to be Babette's
Feast?
It is,
yes.
Okay, well, so we'll hold off on that one. But there's also Daisies. That's kind of like the thief. You know, they're... I guess it is about food,
not
but
really,
they're just gallivanting, doing their thing, dancing on tables with food. Of course, Fanny and Alexander, which it's about so much. It's about Christmas. First and foremost, I think that is Christmas and aging and family. But I guess there's food too. But I think that's more there just is food. speaking of Louis Malle, My Dinner with Andre. I'd say that's pretty food centric.
I don't even remember them eating in that movie though. They're just talking and drinking wine. I feel like
they ate slowly. I remember seeing the knife cut. what else is there? There's some that Les Blank films.
Yeah.
A lot of food in his films. And in fact, they mention Always for Pleasure. But I think there's probably there's garlic. That's the pretty much all.
Yeah, and Yum 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 is really great. The Cajun and Creole cooking documentary is amazing. It's really good.
Makes me so hungry. And of course, Secret of the Grain, some McKeev movies, Sweet Movie, and Love Affair.
Yeah, again, not really.
I don't remember.
Well, in Love Affair, they like make a cake on a naked woman. They like break eggs across her ass. And then Sweet Movie is another one like Salo where it's like, this is not really, but I mean, they have sex and some sugar.
I haven't seen that.
Similar to
like, Salo was not on
similar
list,
like Discreet Charm of Bourgeois and Phantom of Liberty, which have kind of meal related things in them, but are not really food movies at all.
The Phantom of Liberty, well, Discreet Charm is on this list, but Phantom of Liberty is not. But I think I know the scene you're talking about. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it's great.
and it fits with Salo. So they have a couple Japanese films, of course, Tampopo, and then Still Walking. I don't think of Still Walking I think of that as a family film. They just have a lot of scenes at the dinner table.
But they have some have some scenes of preparing food in the movie, right? I mean, it's been a while since I last saw it.
Hasn't been that long, but I guess I've just seen a lot since then. So Tampopo is about food. That's the one, I think, the big one, the big foodie movie.
I think, because Tampopo is almost exclusively about food. It's about, it's about the human drive to consume and not just to, it's actually not about that. It's about the elevation of that just basic drive into something that is true pleasure. And that, you know, that aspect of it is inherently specific to the process of eating. And so, yeah, I mean, Tampopo, even before it was on Criterion, is
respect the
is certainly the king of, the broth. Of food. Yeah, I mean, it's the king of food films for sure. But Japanese movies in general are kind of there's a lot of food in them, and you see people eating different kinds of things, and I do like that. Like, I've been watching a lot of the Eclipse series and a lot of the stuff from the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and there's a lot of food in it, and it's interesting to see just like, what did sushi look like in 1929? Or like, mm-hmm. How did people eat noodles in 1940 versus, you know, in 1962? Because it is different, and it's fun. It's fun to see that.
Well, spoiler alert, human beings do eat and drink.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's interesting, though, is Hollywood doesn't really show that. I mean, they cut out all the boring life stuff and go to the drama or the adventure. But I think, like, Ozu has a lot of scenes at the dinner table with family. And I think they're not really food-related, but they're just happen to be during mealtime or up at the bar having a drink with somebody. You know, they're the act of consuming. So I think that is kind of lacking in American films, at least in comparison to Japanese. So, well, I guess do you want to transition into your short take?
Sure. I watched, I watched Babette's Feast last night, actually. I partially suggested this as a opportunity to watch my disc of Babette's Feast, which I hadn't, watched yet, even though I've seen the movie before. It's such an easy watch. It's so great. It's so fun. And just like, it's a very spiritual film. I mean, again, it's not mm-hmm. necessarily about food 100%, but the food is kind of the vessel of transformation. And these people are able to kind of experience, these deeply religious people are able to experience grace through this unexpected moment that they get through their own benevolence. And it's a really beautiful movie, and I could easily watch it again when we're done with this podcast. It's just a very easy movie to watch.
So I have to make a confession. I have seen the film, but I have this might be a February title.
Well, I was going to call you out on your Letterboxd rating, because it's like you gave it a 2.5 on Letterboxd.
I don't like it, yeah. But the thing is, it's been a while, and I'm actually surprised that you found it an easy watch, because I found it a labor. Now, it's probably been a good. I didn't watch it when it came out, but probably 5-10 years or so.
Okay.
So I've been kind of dreading a revisit. Yeah, I deserve calling out, because that's not fair. That's based on a hazy memory, and probably it was just like a bad. I wasn't ready for that kind of.
Well, I will say one thing. It's kind of interesting. The meal, even the preparing of the meal, doesn't begin until an hour into the movie, and it's only an hour and 45-minute movie. So, that's it. I'm sorry to tell you. And even before that, there's not really like a lot of food stuff for the setup. Because what you're really doing is setting up the two sisters, and then really their gift to this woman and the experience that she had being rescued by them. And what she wants to give back to them in the second half of the film.
Yeah, I think my next viewing, I will take to it a little more, but it's going to be February. So happy Thanksgiving. Well, mine is really not a food movie, but I've seen like pretty much all of the food movies I wanted to see, except for that one, which I will at some point. So I chose Eating Raoul, which I guess is kind of a food movie. Just FYI, spoiler alert, but the spoiler is in the title. So
I believe in your choice. This is a food movie.
And he's a connoisseur, yes. A wine connoisseur. They want to own a restaurant. So the vehicle to them owning a restaurant and being self-sufficient, not working at a probably a hourly job is to kill people and take their money. It makes sense. It's why not? And they use a frying pan to do the deed, but they won't cook out of that frying pan because they don't want to. But they use the same one each time. This is Paul Bartel, who had previously done he's known for Death Race 2000 with Roger Corman, and he did a couple shorts. I didn't get to watch those. They're both on the disc. And he's done another feature, and then he did a few works later. I think I've seen maybe one or two in the 80s. I don't think they're that good.
Yeah, he kind of fizzled out. It was pretty disappointing because, he had a lot of promise. I think he could have been another John Waters.
You know, yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. And so this is not a Babette's Feast, even though I know my 2.5 notwithstanding, but or a Satyajit Ray type of film. This is more of the cult classic category. But the thing is, it's so watchable, it's so silly, and it is actually, in a way, sort of profound. You know, they are taking, they are using this mechanism of this strange plot device where they kill people. It's just amazing they get this made. But they're using it to kind of criticize modern culture. They talk about swinger culture, which I guess was kind of a thing in the 80s. I mean, of course, we had Eyes Wide Shut. It's sexcapade movies all throughout, and I'm sure a lot of stuff happens. But I think it was an actual thing. Of course, I was like 10, so I can't really speak to that. Like key parties, like in the ice storm,
right.
You know, that kind of stuff happened. I think they were poking fun at that. And I just think it's just a lot of fun.
You should definitely watch the shorts. They are great. They have that same kind of skewed sense of humor. And I think they're actually both, but in particular the Secret Cinema, pretty ahead of their time in terms of conceptually. Mm-hmm. And he was just, he was a delight to watch on screen. He's great in various movies such as Follow That Bird and Chopping Mall. Like, you know, if you look through his resume, it's just incredible the varied amount of things he's in. And every time he shows up on screen, he's a delight because he has that great dry delivery and sort of knowing wink.
Yes.
But it's not hammy at all. It's very sly and, he's with you. He's not trying to perform for you. He's like, he wants to be your buddy and it's great.
I think he's maybe a little hammy, but
yeah,
hammy.
In a good way. Yeah.
Like, he's the kind of guy that if you saw him on the street, you probably would just make a judgment and move on. Just because he doesn't look like the kind of character he acts. He's just so much. He's so vivacious,
yeah.
and I don't know that he's actually a great actor.
No,
I just think he's just and I forget the name of the lady. I don't think she's a great actress, but she really worked for the part and kind of had that deadpan delivery, which really fits this film and it really fits this comedy. So and of course, this comedy is him. That's probably his crowning achievement. I mean, it is. I enjoyed this. Now, how I can tie this to Thanksgiving? I mean, Babette's Feast is a little easier. I can't really tie this to Thanksgiving, but I did enjoy watching this. This was one that was unwrapped, so it's saving me from February. So, okay, well, as always, we're running long. I thought we'd just do a quick catch up, but yeah, I guess we can talk some shit. should we get into Moonstruck?
Yeah, let's do it.
So we had the main channel. Again, they're just doing a great job, although I am a little critical of the director of the week, Lucino Visconti, and I'm being self-serving here. I was really hoping for some Viscontis that aren't really available, and there are quite a few of those. The one I was really looking for, which I know you've seen, is Obsession, which was really gateway into neorealism, and it's not available really anywhere. I think it's available on some foreign DVDs, none in America as far as I can see. So, which bums me because I want to see this, but I don't pirate. I think that's probably the only way you can see it. But you have seen it, so don't tell me if you pirated.
I didn't. That I don't pirate, and it's Lucchino, by the way. Come up on your Italian.
what I say? Well, there's an H there.
The CH is a K in Italy.
Right. You're right. You're right.
No, I don't pirate, but I would love to pirate the Visconti films that I am not able to see at the moment, like The Damned and Death in Venice, and the movies that that are not really available, or even the DVDs are out of print. I saw Obsession on VHS in the 90s, and that's the only time that I've seen it. It's great. It's a, I don't know if you know anything about it. It's a Postman Always Rings Twice unofficial adaptation. A lot of people kind of consider it the first neorealist film. I'd love to have some of his other films on here. And all of these are either, all of these are on Blu-ray, either region A or region B, except for La Terra Trema, which I watched, during the previous neorealist bundle.
Yeah. And that was on Hulu as well. And that's where I watched La Terra Trema. Well, I think
it's not Criterion.
I watched it on Netflix disc actually.
Yeah.
Cause I think there was an old DVD.
Yeah. And it looks terrible. It's not in good shape. It needs a lot of work.
You're right. This might look better, but I'm with you. There's a lot of Visconti I want to see. Although Ludwig is one of those unopened, orphaned
Me
Region
too.
B titles. Although that's Region A too, but either way. And there was also Memories of Hiroshima. So of course the obvious one is Hiroshima Mon Amour. There was also let me pull it up here. There was Children of Hiroshima, which I haven't seen. That's a Shindo. There's another, just Hiroshima, from 1953, and Message from Hiroshima, and Hellfire, A Journey from Hiroshima. So I've seen Hiroshima Mon Amour, and that's it. Have you seen any of these?
I haven't even heard of any of the other films here. I am curious about these. I just read the manga Barefoot Gen, which is about Hiroshima. It's kind of like the Japanese equivalent of Mouse, the Holocaust graphic novel. It's really amazing. I don't necessarily know how much energy I'm going to get up to watch these movies. And they've been doing a lot of bummer bundles recently, haven't they? with the French occupation and... I think they did a Holocaust one as well. So
they did. Yeah. So yeah, tragedy. I think it's easy to group. I think maybe one of these was used as footage in Hiroshima Mon Amour, but I could be wrong. Could be totally. I know that they used some archive footage in that movie. But I don't remember where it came from. I actually probably came from closer to the time of the actual bombing, so probably not. All right, so moving on, we have Early Frankenheimer, which is not as much of a bummer, although it's bummy sometimes. So I like Early Frankenheimer of what I've seen. I haven't seen the really early stuff, but I really like, The Train and 7 Days in May are the two big ones, which are great. 7 Days in May is like one of my favorite Cold War movies. And then there's also The Young Savages, All Fall Down, and Birdman of Alcatraz, the latter of which is pretty big. So what do you think about Frankenheimer?
I like Frankenheimer. I don't think he's, the greatest director who ever lived or anything, but he made really solid movies, especially in this stretch. I haven't seen The Young Savages or All Fall Down, but I've seen the other three, and they're all really great. Birdman of Alcatraz is one of those movies that's very easy to watch. If you haven't seen it, you can put it on. You will enjoy it. It goes down very easy, and it's a good watch. Especially the first time I saw it, I think I was probably like 11, visiting my aunt in San Francisco before we went to Alcatraz. So it was kind of like a pretty good situation for seeing that movie.
I think I have the twilight time of that, and I think it's unwatched.
Oh yeah,
February.
Yeah.
But they didn't connect this with Seconds, which is pretty big deal from the same era. And I think there was another one. The Manchurian Candidate.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big
one. Seconds was,
so
was
I guess
on Filmstruck for a little while, right? And then they took it off. I think it was like an addition.
It must have been a spine, yeah. So on that note, we can get to the Criterion Channel. And by the way, I noticed in the app, and I don't know if it's the same as your TV, they've been organizing them differently. Have you noticed this?
I think so, yeah. Well, they had a few different, like, easier ways to browse, because they relaunched the app.
Exactly,
yeah.
I think that, so they have the directors or the double features are all easy to find. And like Observations on Film Art, you can find those easier just horizontally scrolling through them. So, there was the Mustache Club. Was this a new one or is this recycled? Because this wasn't announced. Do you remember seeing this before?
I don't remember seeing it, no.
So it's pretty much Chaplin. Then... Colonel Blimp, that's a big mustache. Jules and Jim, a few others. So, yeah, I guess, again, that's a topic you can group films by. I'm willing to bet they're going to have a foodie one on Friday.
I guess I'm just like, what? Like, okay, so people have mustaches in them.
Exactly.
Seems like an April 1st bundle. Like, why? You're not going to gain any
random.
New insight by viewing these films in context with each other. You're not going to be like, oh, okay, now I really get a full picture of a mustache.
There's got to be a 30-minute featurette just about mustaches in movies. And maybe there is. I don't know.
The stash, yeah.
The stash. No, there's not. At least not that I can tell. So moving on. They are good movies. I guess it just so happens there are a lot of great mustaches in movies. So we had quite a few digital spines this week. So let's just run through those. Everlasting Moments, Jan Troell, which I think was good, but yeah, it's no Emigrants. Do you like
Troell?
Yeah,
I agree 100% with your sentence.
Thank you. Then we have Desert Hearts, which this is actually, I don't know if this is the first time, but so it came out on Filmstruck the same week it came out on DVD. Which I know for you, the guy that doesn't
Hooray.
Buy stuff, that's actually pretty convenient. For the people, doing the financials of Criterion, I don't know if that's the best decision, but whatever. I bought mine. Did you have a chance to watch it yet?
Well, actually, it's funny. The reason that I haven't watched it yet is because I pushed it back in my queue because I'm trying to watch as many of the. Films in the gay and lesbian film bundle on the main channel as I can before they expire on December 1st. So I'm watching the films of those that I want to watch. So when I'm on Filmstruck, I go there. But I'm going to watch Desert Hearts. Desert Hearts, as we're speaking, is the only spine number that I haven't seen. So I'm trying to catch up before the Olympic box set ruins my year. So I should be able to get close anyway. I might not get to Jabberwocky, but
yeah, you have a couple weeks. So I don't know your family obligations, but there's a couple holidays too. And then we had Stalker, and I got to admit, I love Stalker, but I have not watched the Criterion release yet. I've been waiting for that rainy day. But I'm sure this is one you own.
I
right?
do. Yeah. Well, I actually just bought it during the flash sale. I saw the restoration in theaters. So, I'm kind of holding off. I'm hoping they do Mirror soon and the Sacrifice restoration comes out and I can do a full all the way through Tarkovsky. He may be a later season on the complete. We'll see. But,
that would be a good, good
yeah.
fit. Not many movies. I would do him before Takeshi Miike.
Yeah. Yeah, or John
That'd
Ford.
Be a long series. Yeah, or Alan Smithy.
Yeah.
And then Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me. Now, this one is perplexing because I already have it twice. And I think we both observed that the foreign edition of the complete series, not including the return, is like £10 or £15 or something ridiculous. So they're practically giving these away. But you probably did not buy Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, right?
I did.
You did?
I love this movie. I guess I'm just kind of curious if I'll ever watch the full first two seasons again. I will be watching the third season again as soon as I can. I think that I am just a sucker and I really wanted all three David Lynch digipacks sitting next to each other.
You're a Lynch completionist.
I do really like David Lynch. I probably like him a lot more now that I've seen Twin Peaks season 3, which might actually be my favorite thing that he's ever done. But so it's not like I'm like a crazy Lynch nut, but they look really pretty next to each other, I gotta say.
Yeah, they're good looking discs. All right, well, I already talked about it with Jackie and Doug ad nauseum, so I'll move on. Friday double feature. We had Police Adjective. I was wishing for Romanian New Wave. Didn't get any in the February releases, but at least we have it on Filmstruck. And then Insomnia. So have you seen Police
Adjective?
No,
and I'm really excited to watch it. I'm in like a new Romanian cinema like phase right now. I'm watching a lot of them. I just saw The Death of Mr. Lazarescu, which was incredible.
I don't know if you heard last episode. That was my random wish list. Usually we don't do that, but I just love it.
Yeah, I would love it. And I'm still waiting for the Munjus. Like, I don't know what the holdup is. And I just watched Graduation and loved that as well. And it's just they make incredible movie. They made incredible movies for this tight little window. So I'm really excited to watch this. Mm-hmm.
They're still making them. Speaking of Graduation.
Yeah, I just got Aurora from the library. I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, I haven't seen that either. Insomnia, of course, is not Romanian. It's what, Dutch? Swedish. I haven't seen Police Adjective. I think I mentioned once on the show before that I tried to stream that one day, and it was on an airport or on an airplane. And there are some movies you just can't watch on an airplane. And Romanian New Wave, kids, don't try that. and then it's worth mentioning that on Monday we have a digital spine of Babette's Feast. So, if you want to watch it for Thanksgiving, don't want to spend money on the disc or pull it out from your shelf, there you go. Babette's Feast. And then we had a couple new additions to Filmstruck, but nothing earth shattering. We had Eva, and we had Scrubbers and Girl with Green Eyes. So these were all unknown to me. You?
So the Girl with Green Eyes and I think Eva were on Hulu. Girl with Green Eyes was definitely on Hulu. Scrubbers, what the hell is that movie? Like, I read about it. I was like, what is this doing?
Well, you have to watch it.
I mean, did you look at the the cover?
No, I've been
oh,
like
you
a,
should totally.
I've been out like, of town. I'll look at it now. okay. All right. Hellhole Bitches? All right, yeah. I have no idea.
Life in an English girl's reform prison is examined in this brutal picture written by Roy Minton, the person responsible for Scum. I really like that he's responsible for the movie.
I know. It's his fault. Scum is a good movie.
Well, it tells the same story in a prison for boys, so...
Oh, okay. So I guess I really don't need to watch this. I don't think I will. No worries there. Girl with Green Eyes, got nothing. All right. Well, shall we take this ship home?
Let's do it. Let's take it home.
Do you have a piece of flair?
Wait, I had a piece of flair and then I lost it. Oh, you know what? My piece of flair is going to be the movie that I forgot to mention during the food discussion. And it's also relevant to the Arrow conversation that you guys had because it is available on Arrow, which is La Grande Bouffe, which is kind of a French movie, but it's really Italian. It's made by Marco Ferrari. If you want a food movie that will really unsettle you, this is the movie for you because it is a extremely disturbing movie, but not in like the Salo way where like terrible things happen on screen. It's more just sort of unsettling what happens in it. It's basically just a group of guys go to a villa and they eat themselves to death. That's the movie.
Great. Oh, did you just spoil
Not really, because the things happen along the way.
Oh, okay. All right. So that's one I haven't seen yet. It's another unopened February title. But I've had it for a while. Yeah, I have a lot of those. Great idea, Matt. We need another February. We need
2008 Blaine.
Yeah, there's not. We can't plan it into every month, but we'll have to figure something else out. That's a good idea. That's one I've been wanting to see. It's in that Q stack that I mentioned, the 50 discs. So my piece of flair is I finally got my Oppo player. So I got 4K. I'm 4K enabled on disc, and so I went ahead and bought Westworld, the series. I blind bought. I think I'd watched like 15 minutes of the pilot when it came on HBO when I had my my Game of Thrones subscription, but I canceled that, and I was intrigued. But also I thought, okay, well, it was on sale for like $25, so I thought that's a good bang for the buck. But some of the 4K prices are like ridiculous, and some of the movies are crap. Yeah. So it was a good starting point. So I watched. I've seen three episodes of that. And it's Westworld is definitely up my alley. The film. The series, not the film. I went ahead and blind bought Atomic Blonde. I hope I don't hate it. I also have Close Encounters and Oblivion. So and I might get a few 4K titles Black Friday if they're reasonable. I want to get the Blade Runners, but those are like $50 each, including the 2049. So are you 4K enabled?
I'm not like 4K enabled yet. I think the big danger of this Black Friday process will be buying a 4K player. And I hope that I don't succumb to it. 'Cause I will totally wait. I don't need a player right now because the movies are just terrible, almost uniformly. And like you said, the anything that you would actually want is like $50. I mean, because they just had like a $9.99 sale come on today, and I looked through the movies, and it was just like
Fast and the Furious.
And really feel like this 4K movement is is hurting the movie industry because they're releasing almost all of the new movies that come out on 4K, and it really reminds you how terrible movies are right now. Because it's like, oh well, because they're putting out all the new movies on 4K Blu-ray, that's why there's nothing to buy because all of these movies are garbage.
Well, Close Encounters is probably the big one, and I don't know, I wouldn't put that up against a lot of the movies we've talked about today or tonight, but.
No, it's a great movie. Yeah, and Unforgiven is on 4K, and I mean they're out there, but yeah, I mean for the most part, it's slim pickings.
Probably the next one. Well, Atomic Blonde is probably the next one we'll try, and then eventually Close Encounters and Westworld. But it does look fantastic, and I can tell. My wife can't tell the difference, so that says more about me, maybe more about just like us and our. Like home hi-fi tastes or maybe. So that's a show, man. Thanks for coming out. We had more to talk about than I thought.
No, thanks for having me. Well, you know, it was a release month, so or release week rather. Yeah. It's always fun to come on.
So where are you at? Where can people find you on the social?
Where am I at? Webs? Well, I'm Matthew EG on Twitter and Letterboxd, and you can follow my podcast. You can subscribe to it. It's The Complete Kubrick on iTunes. And I think it's The Complete Pod on Twitter. I forget the exact handle, but I think it's The Complete Pod, one word.
I'll put the link in just in case. Is there a website for it? Or is it just
there
the
is, but it's just like a WordPress website that I use to upload it. Basically it's just thecompletepodcast.wordpress.com. So you can go there and listen to it streaming if you don't have iTunes.
Okay. All right. Well, then I will put that link in there. It's easier to link to those than it is to iTunes because you can just search iTunes. So, all right. Well, I'm at AWS505 on Twitter. Again, still, doing a little bit of tweeting about what an asshole Roy Moore is. But a lot of that, I think I've made my opinion.
And you got a good burger.
I did get a good burger. Yes, I got one of the I got the Birkin bag of burgers. You can find the show at Criterion Cast Master Feed, Criterion Cast Online. You can come hang out with us in the Facebook group. You can come hang out in Criterion Considered as well. there's about 7 times, maybe 8 times the people in considered. So it's maybe not as cozy, but there's good discussions going on. And there won't be a show next week because of Thanksgiving. So enjoy your turkey, and sorry for all your family that has to listen to this in the car with your husbands. So happy Thanksgiving, all. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Aaron. Take care.